The poor people, they go from house to house, drinking in every bar, drinking wine everywhere they go. The homeowners, they sit at home and drink wine in their own homes. The thieves, they live in caves, and they drink there out of their clay mugs. The judges, they sit next to the courtroom and drink it by the bottle. And the shopkeepers, they sit right next to the shop, and they drink it out of the ladle. This is wine, but what are they shouting? They're saying, everyone, please, give us some Brompfen. We need brandy, we need whiskey. Have you an name, Holchim, Iber, the Heiser, drinking nine in Hallebreiser, Eilow, Eilow, Tsoyakim, Boch, Trink Brompfen, will sich doch. Yoishvim bebateihem, shaisin yayim bekleihem, eilu v'eilu tzayakim boch, atring bromfen viltich doch. Yoishvim b'machteres v'shoisim yayin b'kleicheres eile v'yele tzayakim chai atring bromfen podavai ayadayam dararayram dararam dararayram dararayram dararam dararam barabam ayayayayam bairay. Dayonim ayoyshvim etzel aroidem v'shoysim yayin v'ule fleshul eile v'yele tzayakim boch hatring bromfen v'iltich doch. Ay, day, day, dam, podava.
The penknife. Listen, Jewish children, I'm going to tell you a story about a penknife. It's not a concocted tale, but a real one that actually happened to me. I never wanted anything so much as a penknife. There is no treasure in the world I wanted badly as a knife to call my very own. I'd keep the knife with me in my pocket, and I'd take it out whenever I wished and cut anything I wanted, and I'd tell my friends all about it. I had just begun to go to Yosel's cheder. He taught the youngest children, and I already had a knife. Well, it was almost a knife. I had actually made it myself, plucked a goose feather from a feather duster, cut off one end, flattened the other, and pretended that it was a knife that could cut.
Oh, what sort of a feather? What sort of a feather is this? The devil take it. What sort of a business is this, running around with feathers? Asked my father, a sickly, wizened man with a yellow face. There you go. Feathers! Spillichlich!
What do you care what the boy plays with? Said Mama, a short woman who wore a silk kerchief. Your enemies should eat their hearts, so.
Later, when I moved up to the study of the Humush, I almost had a real knife, which I also made for myself. I found a piece of steel in my mother's crinoline and ingeniously set it into a piece of wood. I diligently sharpened the steel on a pot, and naturally I cut all my fingers.
Just look at him. See how he's bloodied his fingers. The cottage diner, father shouted, grabbing me so forcefully that my bones rattled. A Shainer Bucher kick.
A thunder strike me, said Mama. She took the knife away and threw it into the oven, paying no need to my tears. Now there'll be an end to it. They smear me.
Nevertheless, I soon got myself another knife. This time, a real, honest-to-goodness knife. The wooden handle was round and pot-bellied, and it looked like a barrel, and it had a bent blade that opened and closed. You want to know how I got it? I scraped up the capital by saving my breakfast money and bought the knife from Shlomo for 10 kopecks. 7 kopecks cash, 3 on credit. Oh, how I love that knife. How I adored it. I came home from school, dead tired, hungry, sleepy, and beaten up. You see, I had just begun studying with the Talmud teacher, Muti, the angel of death, Malamachavis. We were on the chapter, an ox that gored a cow. And since one animal bumped into another, naturally I get potched. First, I removed the little knife from under the black cupboard where I had hidden it. I couldn't take it to school, and I didn't dare let anyone know that I had a knife at home. After that, I smoothed and slit a piece of paper in two and sliced a straw in half. Then I cut my piece of bread into tiny little pieces, speared them with the tip of my blade, and finally transferred them to my mouth. Later, before going to sleep, I cleaned the knife, scoured and polished it, took the whetstone I had found in the attic, spit on it, and quietly set to work sharpening the blade. Father, a yarmulke on his head, was bent over a sacred text, studying and coughing, coughing and studying. Mother was in the kitchen, busy with the challah, but I did not stop sharpening my little knife for an instant.
Suddenly, Father jumped up as though from sleep. Who's squeaking over there? What's going on? What are you doing, you shiggets? He approached, bent over my whetstone, grabbed me by the ear. Knives! Father took the knife and the whetstone away from me. What a young gotch! Too lazy to pick up a book and study. Ah!
I began to wail. Father helped things along with a few patches, and Mama, her sleeves rolled up, dashed in from the kitchen, crying,
"Stop it! Stop it! What's going on? Why are you hitting him? For goodness sake, what have you got against the child? Face mere need."
Knives, Father shouted. A breaker, a kind. A Zion. Gotch! Can't you pick up a book? You're 8 years old already. I'll give you knives, right, you empty-headed scamp. Knives all of a sudden.
Gewalt, what did he have against my little knife? How had the little thing sinned against him? Why was he so angry? Oh, my father, I remember, was almost constantly ill. Always pale and yellow, in a perpetual rage at the world. He blazed with anger at the most trivial thing and was ready to trample me. Luckily, Mama kept a wary eye and saved me in the nick of time. They threw my little penknife so far, I couldn't even find it after an intensive 8-day search. I sincerely mourned my misshapen knife. My good little knife. How dark and bitter was my lot in Cheder. I came home day after day with swollen cheeks, with red ears mercilessly tweaked by the hands of Mote Malamachavis, all because an ox bumped into a cow. To whom could I turn? I was as lonely as an orphan without my little misshapen knife. A year, perhaps a year and a half passed. I had almost forgotten that misshapen little penknife. But it turned out I was destined to be plagued by knives throughout my childhood. As ill luck would have it, another little penknife came into my life. It was brand new. So help me, a beauty. There was nothing like it. It had a white bone handle, 2 expensive razor-sharp steel blades. It came in a brass case studded with red brass tacks. I tell you, it was out of this world. The best on the market. How did I get a hold of such an expensive penknife? An item I couldn't possibly afford? Well, it's a long, sad, but interesting story. So listen carefully, please. We had a lodger, a German Jew, a contractor named Herr Herzenherz. Could you imagine my opinion of him if he mumbled Yiddish, but was bareheaded, beardless, and without payers? And, sad to relate, even went about in a highly untraditional short gabardine. I ask you, how was I to keep a straight face when this Jewish goy, or goyish Jew, spoke to me in his fractured Yiddish, a queer dialect that had more German than Yiddish?
Well, my dear boy, what our portion of your evenings is weekend shul?
I giggled and hid my face in my hands.
Tell me, meine liebes Kindchen, was Sidra, wir reading von Sitao?
I exploded with laughter and ran away. Well, a year later, however, I was already familiar with our Jewish German, and I liked him very much. It no longer bothered me that Herr Hertz and Hertz didn't say his prayers and ate without ritually washing his hands. At first, I could not understand why he was not struck down. How come God permitted him to live? Why didn't he choke while eating? Why didn't all his hair fall out? My Rebbe, Mote Malamacheves, told me himself that this Jewish German, was a wandering soul, a Jew who had become a German, and who might later reappear as a wolf, a cow, a horse, or even a duck. A duck? That would be really something. I thought, pitying the poor German. Still, one thing puzzled me. Why did Father, who was an honest, God-fearing man, always seat him at the head of the table? And why did all the others who visited us also treat him with the utmost respect?
Shalom Aleichem, Reb Hertz, Hertz, and Hertz, they would say. Baruch Haba. Welcome, Reb Hertz, Hertz, and Hertz.
Once I even asked Father about this, but he pushed me away and said,
Gavik, it's none of your business. Why are you roaming around here? The devil take it. Are you too lazy to take a book in hand?
Again, a book. God Almighty, I too wanted to be a part of things. I too wanted to hear what Herr Hertz and Hertz was talking about. I stole into a corner of the living room, listened to Herr Hertz, Hertz and Hertz, laughing loudly, watched him smoking his thick, black, aromatic cigars. Suddenly, Father came over and punched me.
You here again, you pustat. Pasnik, what's going to become of you? What's going to become of you? You Goyetzainer, Gevolt, what's going to become of you? But Hertz, Hertz and Hertz stood up for me. I'll leave him alone. Let the boy be.
But to no avail, Father chased me out anyway. I picked up a book, but had no desire to read it. What to do? I wandered from room to room till I came to the nicest one of all, the one where Herr Hertz, Hertz, and Hertz slept. Oh, how bright and cheerful his room was. The lamps glowed and the mirrors sparkled. A big silver inkwell and several fine pens were on the tables, as well as several knickknacks and a penknife. And what a beauty. If only I had such a knife, how happy I would be. What things I would carve. Yes, it must be put to the test. Was it sharp? Yes, it cut a hair, sliced it right in two. Boy, that was a knife. In no time, the knife was in my hand. I looked from side to side and slipped the knife into my pocket. For a moment, my hand trembled. My heart beat so loudly that I could hear it going tick, tick, tick. I heard someone coming, a pair of boots creaking. It was Hertz, Hertz and Hertz. What should I do? I'd better keep the knife in my pocket now. I'd put it back later. Now I had to leave the room and run away. I could not eat supper. Mama touched my forehead. Father looked at me sternly and sent me to bed. Sleep. Do you think I could close my eyes? For all intents and purposes, I was dead. What was I to do with the knife? How could I put it back? For the first time since I had the knife, the terrible thought, stolen, entered my mind. In other words, I was a thief. A plain and simple terms, a thief. A ganef. The Torah. The Ten Commandments. Declared in capital letters, Lo Tignov, thou shalt not steal. Which is precisely what I had done. What would they do to me in Gehenna for this deed? Oh, me, they would chop off the hand I'd stolen with. They'd beat me with iron rods. I'd be sizzled on a hot frying pan. I'd burn forever. Yes, I had to return the knife. I had to return it to its place. I must not keep a stolen knife. Tomorrow, I would return it. With these thoughts in mind, I placed the knife next to my breast, and I felt that it singed. It burned me. I crawled into my bed and tried to sleep, but I could not. I tossed and turned from one side to the other. At dawn, I finally dozed off and dreamed of knives and iron rods and the moon. I awoke early, prayed with great devotion, gulped a quick breakfast, and went straight to Cheder.
What's chasing you? You won't lose much Torah by coming a bit later. You better bench properly and don't skip anything. You still have plenty of time to be irresponsible, you ruffian, you apicorus, you trifnia!
How come so late? Well, look here, the Rebbe scolded me. He pointed at my friend, Berela the Redhead.
Who stood in a corner with bowed head.
You see, you scoundrel. Know that from this day on, he will no longer be known as Berela the Redhead. No. Now he'll have a far finer name. From now on, he'll be called Berela the Thief. Berela der Ganif. So shout it out, my lads. Berela is a thief. Berela der Ganif. The Rebbe intoned these words in sing-song pattern, and all the children chorused.
Berela is a thief. Berela der Ganif.
I stood there, petrified. A cold wave surged over me. I didn't know what it all meant.
Why the tight lips, you Shegetzener? The Rebbe turned to me with an unexpected patch. How come you're so quiet, you goyets? Don't you hear them all singing? Sing along with the rest. Berela is a thief. Berela der Ganif.
My hands and feet shook. My teeth chattered. But I sang along. Berela is a thief. Berela der Ganif.
Louder, Shegetzener. The Rebbe spurred me on. Louder! Louder!
Along with the entire chorus, I caterwauled. Berela is a thief. Berela der Ganif.
Shut! The Rebbe cried suddenly, banging the table. Pipe down! Now the trial is going to begin. And he chanted in Talmudic sing-song, Oh, Berela der Ganif, come over here, my lad, and make it snappy. Tell me, boy, what's your name?
Berela.
Berela what? The Rebbe sang.
Berela. Berela. Berela der Ganif.
That's the spirit, my dear lad. Now you're a lovely little boy. And now, Berela, the Rebbe continued chanting, live and be well and have vigor of body. Now, if you please, take off all your garments. That's the way. Snap it up quicker. I beg you, just a little bit quicker. That's it, Berishka, my dear one.
Berela stood there as naked as the day he was born. All the blood drained out of his face. He did not move. His eyes were lowered. He looked like a dead man, a corpse.
The Rebbe, still chanting, called one of the older students. Come now, big Herschele, let's hear the story from beginning to end. Tell how our Berela became a ganef. Listen carefully, my lads.
Big Herschele began to tell the story. Berela had gotten hold of the charity box named after Rebbe Meir Balinese, who, into which his mother dropped a kopeck or two every Friday evening before lighting the candles. Berela got a hold of the locked charity box and with a tar-tipped straw drew out every last kopeck in the box. Then his mother, Zlate the horse, caught on, opened the Sadaka Pushka, found the tar-tipped straw, and led him straight to the gallows. Right after the Rebbe's whipping, Barila admitted that for the past year, he had been swiping kopecks out of the Sadaka Pushka and buying himself 2 honey cakes and figs every Sunday, and so on and so forth.
And now, Kinder, judge him. You know what to do. It's not the first time we're doing this. Let each one declare what punishment should be meted out to a ganif who steals kopecks from the tzedakah pushka. Hershela, you begin. The Rebbe cocked his head, closed one eye, and cupped his right ear.
Hershela answered loudly, "The ganif who steals kopecks from a tzedakah pushka should be whipped until the blood begins to flow."
Moishele, what should be done to a ganif who steals kopecks from the tzedakah pushka?
This is what should be done, said Moishe plaintively, to a ganif who steals kopecks from a tzedakah pushka. He should be stretched out on the ground. 2 boys should sit on his hands, 2 on his feet, and 2 should beat him with well-salted rods.
What do you say, Kopele, to a ganif who steals kopecks from the tzedakah pushka?
Kopele wiped his nose and squeaked out his judgment. Ganif who steals kopecks from the tzedakah pushka should have all the kids come up to him and sing right into his face. Ganif, ganif, ganif.
Everyone burst out laughing.
The Rebbe summoned me with the traditional melody used to call a groom to the Torah. Ya'amoid, ya'amoid, hachusun shalom bereb nachum, maftir, tell me, shalomke, my pet, what punishment do you suggest for a ganif who steals kopecks from the tzedakah pushka?
I wanted to reply, but my tongue did not obey me. I shivered as though in a fever. I felt as though I was being strangled. A cold sweat covered me from head to toe. My ears rang. I no longer saw the Rebbe, my friends, or the stark naked Barila der Ganif. I only saw knives, an endless array of white, open, multi-bladed knives. The moon hung suspended by the door. It smiled and gazed at me as though it were human. My head spun. Everything was revolving. The cheder, my friends, the table, the books, the moon suspended on the door. All the knives. My legs were being cut away from out beneath me. Soon I'd keel over. But with effort, I braced myself to keep from falling over. At night, I came home. My face burned. My cheeks flamed. My ears buzzed. I couldn't make out what people were saying to me. Father said something. He was angry and wanted to slap me, and Mama stood up for me, spread her apron like a hen taking her chicks under her wings. I didn't hear a thing. I didn't want to hear. I just wanted night to fall quickly so I could make an end of the penknife. What should I do with it? Confess and return it? Then I'd end up like Barila. Return it secretly? What if they caught me? The solution was to throw it away and be rid of it. Where could I throw it so that they would never find it? The roof. Oh, they'd hear it bang. The garden. No, they'd find it. Aha! I had an idea. I knew where to throw it. Into the water. Oh, into the water, I swear that was a great idea. Into the water, into the well, right here in our courtyard. The idea pleased me so much, I decided I wasn't going to deliberate too long. I grabbed the penknife and dashed to the well. I wasn't holding a knife, I imagined, but something hideous and despicable that I wanted to get rid of, and the quicker the better. Still, I regretted losing the knife. It was so expensive. I stood for a moment lost in thought. I fancied I was losing a living thing, and my heart grieved for it. After all, it had cost me so much effort. It was like destroying a living creature. But I plucked up my courage and let it slip out of my fingers. Pluck. The water splashed and then fell silent. Goodbye, knife. I stood for a while by the well, listening. Not a sound. Thank God. Finally, had gotten rid of it. Nonetheless, my heart felt heavy. It hurt me. After all, there was nothing like that knife. I went back to bed and saw the moon gazing at me. I fancied it had seen my every move. I heard a distant voice saying, "But you're still a thief. Catch him, beat him. He's a gonif, a gonif." Oh, I slipped back into the house and lay down to sleep. I dreamt I was running, floating, flying in the air with the knife. The moon noticed me and said, "Catch him, beat him, he's a gonif, a gonif." Oh, a long, deep sleep, oppressive dreams. A fire burned within me. My head hummed. Everything was red as blood. Fiery rods struck me. I wallowed in blood. Snakes and scorpions writhed about me, mouths open, ready to swallow me. I heard a sharp blast near my ear. Takia! Shivarim! Terua! Someone stood over me, chanting rhythmically, "Beat him! Beat him! Beat him! He's a ganif!" I cried, "Gavol, take the moon away from me! Give the moon the knife! What have you got against Beryl and Nebuch? He's not to blame. It's me who's the ganif! The ganif!" The rest I don't remember. I opened one eye. And then the other. Where was I? Apparently, on a bed. What was I doing here? Who was sitting on the bench next to the bed? Oh, it's you, Mama. Mama! She didn't hear me. Mama! 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 What did this mean? I was sure I was shouting. Wait, I listened. She was crying. Crying softly. I also saw Father's yellow, sickly face. He was bent over a book. He said something softly and coughed. He sighed and groaned. Apparently, I was already dead. Dead? But then I felt my eyes brightening. My head felt better. So did the rest of my body. One ear buzzed, and then the other. Zing! I sneezed. Hare, zugesund!
Long life to you! Many years of good health! Simonto
Mazda! Congratulations!
Oh, dear God, thank you!
Actually sneezed, thanks be the Almighty!
We have a great God! The boy will be well, God willing! Baruch Hu, Baruch Shu!
Quick, let's call Minty, the Shoichet's wife! She's an expert at charms to ward off the evil eye!
Better call the doctor! The doctor!
The doctor? What for? Nourish guide! He's a doctor? The Rebishter is the best doctor in the world. God, Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo. Move on, folks. Please, please, please. Disperse a bit. It's awfully hot, for God's sake. Move on.
Well, I told you we should pour out a wax image of him. So who was right, huh?
Thank God. Praised be Hashem Yisparach. God, 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 Baruch Hu, Baruch Shemo.
People swarmed around me. They stared at me. Everyone approached and tapped my forehead. They said charms over me. They whispered to me. They licked my forehead. They spat. They tended me. They poured hot soup into me and stuffed me with spoonfuls of jam. Everyone hovered over me, caring for me like I was the apple of their eye. Oh, they fed me broths and ducklings like a baby. They did not leave me alone. Mama always sat next to me and repeated the entire story. I had fallen to the ground virtually lifeless, and they had to lift me up. I lay delirious for 2 weeks. They thought I was, quitting this world, when suddenly I sneezed 7 times and returned from the dead to life.
Now we know what sort of God we have, Baruch Hu. Baruch Shemo, said Mama with tears in her eyes. Now we know that if we call to him, he hears our sinful requests and our guilt-ridden tears. We shed plenty of tears, your father and I, until finally God showed some pity. Almost lost a child, God forbid. Almost lost a child on account of our great sins. May we suffer what God intended for you. What prompted all this trouble? What was it all about? A boy, a ganif, some barreler whom the rabbi beat up in cheder till he was bleeding. When you came home from cheder, you looked half dead already. May I suffer all your sins. What a murderer that rabbi is. What a brute. May God get even with him, dear Lord. No. No, my child, if we live and be well, and you raise from your sick bed, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll get you another teacher, not such a hangman, such a murderer, like this Malach HaMuvos, Yimach Shemo Zichro.
This bit of news delighted me no end. I hugged her and kissed her. Dear, dear Mama.
Father approached slowly. He touched my forehead with his cold, pale hands and said softly without a trace of anger, "Oy, you've given us quite a fright, Dush Kotzener, you little rascal."
Even our beardless Jewish German, Herr Herz, Herzenherz, bent over my bed with a cigar between his teeth, patted my cheek and said in German,
"Gut, gut, gesund, you're strong and healthy now."
2 weeks later, I had recuperated.
My father said, "Well, my boy, now go to cheder and pay no more mind to knives or other such narishkeit. It's high time you grew up and became a shtigala mensch. In 3 years, Mir Tashem, you'll be bar mitzvah. May you live to be 120.
With these sweet words, father sent me to a new cheder, run by Reb Chaim Kotter. This was the first time that I had heard such kind and gentle words from my usually irascible father. In an instant, I forgot all his persecutions, all his curses, all his potches. It was as though they had never happened. If not for embarrassment, I would have hugged and kissed him. Still, how can one possibly kiss one's father? Mama gave me a whole apple and 2 kopecks to take to cheder. And the German, too, pinched my cheek and presented me with 2 kopecks.
"Good boy," he said. "Excellent boy."
I took a gemora, kissed the mezuzah, and went to cheder like a newborn. Calm, clear-headed, and pure of heart. Spiritually refreshed, with honest and pious thoughts. The sun greeted me with its warm rays. A light breeze blowing at my earlock sounded like a bird chirping. I felt as if I were uplifted, flying. I felt like running, dancing, leaping. Oh, how good it was to be alive when one is honest, when one is neither ganav nor liar. Oh, I pressed the gemora close to my heart and ran eagerly to cheder. I swore that I would never, ever take anything that wasn't mine, that I would never, ever steal, that I would never, ever deny anything, but would always be honest. Absolutely honest.